This is Carol Foster of 2 Timothy 2:15 Resources, and I am so excited that you're going to join me today as we study God's Word. The response new Messianic believers give when asked why they initially visited a Messianic congregation is, "We knew there had to be more." As we study together, we will begin to see that yes, indeed, there has to be more. For additional study aids to assist you in studying along with us, go to our website, sectim.org. In our last session together, we introduced our go-to or foundational verse, which is Proverbs 18:10. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it and are safe. I really like the Complete Jewish Bible's translation of this verse. The name of Adonai is a strong tower. A righteous person runs to it and is raised high above danger. In Proverbs 10:29, there's a similar expression. The way of the Lord is a stronghold to the upright, but ruin to the workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be shaken, but the wicked will not dwell in the land. A strong tower or stronghold refers to an essential part of a city's defense, a place of protection against enemy attacks. We might also translate this as, "The Lord is my defense," or, "The name of the Lord defends me." We found that in all of the different translations of this verse, they all stated that the name of the Lord is like a strong tower, that the righteous can run into it and are raised above danger and are kept safe. This figure of speech is called a simile. It involves a comparison of one thing with another thing of a different kind. It's used to make a description more emphatic or vivid, such as brave as a lion or quick like a fox. So, in this instance, it is comparing the use of the God's name, his characteristics and attributes, to a strong tower or a fortress that provides safety and protection. We found that the Hebrew word used here for name is Shem. However, we also discovered that it encompasses all that a person is, that is, all of his characteristics and attributes as well. When we read this proverb, we could easily add the definition of his name. It would read, "The characteristics and attributes that are his names are like a strong tower where the righteous can run into, escape, hide, and are guarded and protected by his name. Elohim, the strong and mighty creator of the universe, or Elyon, the most high God. The righteous man runs into it and is safe." This line expands on the sense of the first line. In the New American Standard Bible, the righteous man translates the same Hebrew noun as the righteous that is used in Proverbs 10 verses 6 and 7 and many other places. It refers to good or upright people, or perhaps in this context, people who trust in the name of the Lord. The Contemporary English Bible translated as his people. The word translated as safe is the Hebrew word that means to be high. It's the same term as used in the next verse for a high wall. In this verse, the sense is out of the way of harm or safe from attack. We learned about how Hagar, Sarah's maidservant, was given to Abram as a second wife. Sarah's hope was that she would conceive, and then she, Sarah, would take the child and raise it as her own. Thus, Abram would have a child of his own, and someone who would then inherit not only all of what Abram owned, but would also then be the recipient of all of the promises that God had made to Abram. Now, last session, we looked at Hagar and how Elroy came to her and gave her and her son their own promise of a future. Elroy means to see. I want us to briefly go back for just a minute and review the encounter that Hagar had with the angel who brought God's message to her. Now, our reference text is going to come from Bereshit or Genesis 16. Hagar was Sarah's maidservant. She was probably a young Egyptian girl. She had been with Sarah a long period of time. Now, remember, they had been in Canaan for 10 years. Sarah gave her to Abram as a second wife. Hagar had no choice in the matter, and as a slave, she was her mistress's property to do with as her mistress wanted. She became Abram's second wife. Hagar conceived and bore a son to Abram. Hagar then despised her mistress, Sarah, and treated her badly. This also caused Sarah to be the talk of the camp and probably a point of public ridicule. Now, the thought at the time is that if a woman was barren, it was a curse from God. Sarah confronted Abram, and Abram gave Hagar back to Sarah to do with her whatever she wanted. Hagar felt that Sarah was going to kill her and her child, and she fled into the desert. An angel sent from God appeared to her at the spring where they had stopped for water, and he gave her a promised inheritance and a greatness for her descendants through her son. Hagar named the spring, "God Alive Sees Me," spring. The angel also told her to return to her mistress. The God who sees, El Roy, is a God that sees us when we feel that we are totally alone in our circumstances and feel that no one sees or cares what we're going through in our lives. We applied this then to our lives and found that El Roy, the God that sees, is the one that we can turn to when we feel that we have been discarded by someone, maybe used for their selfish benefit and mistreated. When we feel that we have had no choice, no voice, no control or power in a situation. If we feel that we have been cast aside in favor of someone or something else, that we are of no value, that we were not loved, wanted, or respected, we are not alone. Our God, El Roy, was there. He saw our situation, and we can run into His name, the God who sees, and know that we are not alone, that someone does care, that we are safe in the mighty fortress that is His name. The understanding of El Roy and its implication in our lives is so amazing that we're going to go back and study this three-way relationship between Abram, Sarah, and Hagar. And we're going to use our tools of observation again in this session. These are the five W's in an H type of question. Now, this is the systematic approach to looking at the scriptures that will give us a clear sense of our observation. It is called, again, the five W's in an H, who, what, when, where, why, and how type of questions. Learning this skill will help you really see the scriptures on a different level. The relationship between Sarah and Abram is really interesting. Let's go back and look at these two individuals and how they ended up in this mess. Sarah was Abram's wife, and she was barren. She had no children. The land of Canaan had been given to Abram and his descendants. God spoke to Abram, telling him that he would be the father of nations. Now, this is an important reference as it precedes the covenant between God and Abram. We are part of this covenant today, as we are now the children of Abram by faith. We also saw that this covenant between God and Abram, giving Abram the promise of descendants and land, as well as telling Abram a brief history of his descendants. Whose idea was it that Abram and Hagar have relations, and why? Well, we saw in Genesis 16 that it was Sarah's idea to have Abram have relations with Hagar. Sarah had been unable to have children, and she decided to assist God in fulfilling His promise to her and Abram that they would have offspring. It would be the child of Sarah and Abram that would be his heir, and his promise would be reestablished. We also saw that Sarah heard the prophecy of the angels, and when she heard it, she laughed. We see that then again, God reestablished His promise of a son to Abram and Sarah. Now, this is the first time that we see Sarah had heard directly the promise of a child. The other scriptures state that these interactions were between God and Abram. I'm sure that he had shared this with Sarah, but she did not hear it directly for herself. Even though she had probably been told by Abram, she now heard it for herself from the angels. And she laughed. She really didn't believe, as she had already tried to make God's promises happen. She felt that she needed to help God make His prophecies come about. Do we ever feel that God needs our help to fulfill His promises? That it depends on us if His promises are to be? Our only responsibility is to hear, believe, and obey. It is God's responsibility to bring them about. Now understand that we do have a responsibility, but it is God that makes it happen. He uses our obedience through faith to bring about the promise. Do you think Hagar had much of a choice in this decision? Let's reason this out. Hagar was an Egyptian girl, a handmaid to Sarah, and accordingly, a handmaid is really a servant to the woman of the house. So she wasn't part of the family or even a free servant, but rather a slave. As a slave, she did not have rights. She did not have a voice, and she was a possession for her mistress to do with whatever she wanted. We know there had been a famine in the land of Canaan. So Abram and his wife and household went down into Egypt to stay there until it was over. This is probably where Sarah had acquired Hagar. After the famine, Abram and his entire household went back to his home in Canaan. They had already spent 10 years in Canaan when Hagar was given to Abram as a second wife. Hagar was probably a young child or maybe a teenager when she was acquired in Egypt, because she was still childbearing years when this occurred. What provoked Sarah, and how did she respond? Well, we find that Sarah was despised in Hagar's sight. The word despised really means to make light of or to look down on. So Hagar, once she became pregnant by Abram, developed an attitude of disrespect and haughtiness towards Sarah. Again, let us look at the culture of the day. Men took many wives and concubines. If the first wife didn't bear any children, and the second or third wife did, then the wife that had the firstborn child became the chief wife, or the most important wife. Hagar, because she had grown up in this culture, she was very familiar with this custom. So, when she became pregnant, in her own eyes, she became more important than Sarah. What do you think that would mean in the household of Abraham? How would it be gossiped about, or how the rumors and mutterings would spread? Sarah was very aware of what was going on, probably not only behind her back, but probably right to her face. She was embarrassed, humiliated, and just very angry. This young Egyptian slave now walked around bad-mouthing her and encouraging those in the household to do so as well. Hagar was young, attractive, and now pregnant with Abraham's child, the heir to all of Abram's wealth and possessions. This was a very bad situation for Sarah. She felt as if she was being discarded, put out of her rightful place of respect and authority as the first wife of Abram. Sarah felt she could not tolerate it any longer. She had to do something about it. Isn't it interesting? Sarah tried to help God make His promise come true, and all it did was to backfire and cause her pain and suffering. Sarah turned the situation around and told Abram that it was all his fault that she was suffering all of this abuse from Hagar. Again, I find this interesting that when something we do backfires on us, we blame someone else for the problems that arise. In Genesis 16, verse 6, we read that Abraham told Sarah that Hagar was in her power to do whatever she wanted with her, and Sarah treated her harshly. Even though Hagar was pregnant with Abraham's child, he gave Sarah permission to do whatever she wished. Now, that could have meant anything and everything, from a mild punishment to a severe beating, to even having her put to death. She was sent in to be with Abraham. She had no choice in the matter. Just think how old Abraham was in relation to her youth. Then, after she did conceive, she was basically thrown away by Abraham, the father of her child. Sarah, her mistress, could do anything she wanted with her. The father of her child didn't care for her or her unborn baby, even though it was his child as well. He didn't care whether they lived or died. Sarah, her mistress, who had probably treated her very well prior to this, now treated her harshly. Hagar was not sure how all of this would end. What would happen to her? Would she and her child pay the ultimate price for her attitude and her behavior? Now, remember, she was not pregnant by her own desires, but by her mistress's orders. Rather than face the consequences of her actions, instead of facing her mistress, Hagar ran away. Do you think Hagar was totally innocent in all of this? Neither one of them, Sarah or Hagar, were totally innocent in this situation. Do we ever take situations that we may have had a large part in, and when they turn around to impact us negatively, immediately look to lay the blame on someone else? She had status, she had recognition, she had position, and now she was back to being a slave, and she was humiliated and treated badly. Now the gossip, murmuring, and laughter was aimed at her. If we think about it, we can totally relate to Hagar. We probably have all been in a similar situation. Everything has turned around, and now we are reaping the results of our actions. What was God's instructions to Hagar? They were to return to her mistress and submit herself to her authority. Now, that's a really bitter pill to swallow. Go back and face the music. Have you ever found yourself in this situation? You ran away instead of facing the music? You hide, make excuses, and lie? Then have to face what took place? Whether you were an innocent victim or the abuser, we still all want to run. If you were the innocent victim, to face your abuser is a frightening thing. Just as Hagar had to face Sarah, even though Hagar was not totally innocent, it was terrifying. What would happen to her? What would happen to her child? Would she survive returning, going back to face not only Sarah, but the issues that had caused her problem? We all have all faced the same situation in our lives. It could be anything in your past that you had to return to and deal with. Anything as simple as a child who took a candy bar from a store without paying for it, and their parents making them return it to a clerk and admitting what they had done and facing the consequences. What did Hagar learn about God? She found out that Elroy knew her name. He knew Hagar. He knew her position in life, Sarah's servant. And he told her to go back and submit herself to her mistress's authority. Her problem, she was pregnant, and she felt that neither her or her child was value. And he, Elroy, the God who sees, provided the promise. He even named the child Ishmael, which means God hears. We see that his descendants would be greatly multiplied in verse 10. Moreover, the angel of the Lord said to her, I will greatly multiply your descendants, so that they will be too many to count. And in verse 12, we saw that he also saw the future. He will be like a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him. And he will live to the east of all his brothers. That in the midst of everything, she was not alone. That God, Elroy, the God who sees, was there. Hagar had not been abandoned. She was cared for, and she did have a promise. He cared for her and provided for her. Elroy gave her a future and a promise. Do you think it would help, or would have helped, you in your situation to know God as Elroy? Here's where we can personalize our foundation verse in Proverbs 10:18. This might help us to understand that God, Elroy, was there, and we were not alone. Sometimes it isn't until later in our lives do we see that Elroy was indeed present in those difficult situations. God was there. He did see, and He did protect us in the middle of the circumstances, or He did turn it around for our good. Sometimes these experiences allow us to minister to others in ways that only we are able to do. Many times when we're mistreated, used by someone we trust or respect, we tend to bury the situation. The memory of it, the emotions, the rejections all seem too much to bear. So we stuff it. I guess we think it will go away. But our minds are like computer hard drives. They store the memory. Then something happens and the file is called up and replayed on the monitor screen of our minds. The pain, the memory, the bitterness, the condemnation, the guilt, the rejection is just too much. So, once again, we stuff it. Maybe at even a much deeper level than before. Sometimes we think that our pain, our past, our rejection is again just too much. There will never be a healing in or a wholeness to our lives again. But child of the Most High, the Almighty God, El Elyon, healing is possible. Otherwise, a sovereign God of love would surely have intervened. Where does healing begin? It begins with the recognition of El Roy, the God who sees. He was awake. He saw it all. You were never alone. The first time we meet God in the Word as El Roy, we find Him telling Hagar to go back and deal with the situation. We must face what has happened to us and deal with it as it really was. I know that this is not easy, but healing begins when we face our pain. God saw it all. There is no hiding the facts from Him. Remember Psalms 139 from our study of Elohim? Let's take another look at and some other scriptures as well. Psalms 139, 7 through 12 reads, "Where can I go from your spirit? O, where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me, and your right hand will lay hold of me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, the light all around me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as the day. Darkness will light our light to you." I want to rewrite this using what we've learned about Elohim, El Elyon, and El Roy. Is there any place that we can hide from God? There is no place that we can hide from El Elyon, Elohim, or El Roy. If I flee to heaven or descend into hell, that hell can be a situation in our lives, such as abuse or addiction, He is there. If I run away, either in actuality or emotionally, He is there. Even then His right hand shall hold me in the blackest of night or the brightest of daylight. Whether I feel like the world has ended, I have been abandoned and forgotten, or if everyone knows and just doesn't care. My God sees and cares, as we saw by the remainder of Psalms 139. He will not abandon us nor forsake us, as we are His creation, designed and created just for Him, and His thoughts of us are too numerous to count. He and all of His names and all of His characteristics and attributes are with me. I can run into His names and what they provide and promise. I will be safe, protected, and guarded. I challenge you to stop and think of ways that knowing God as El Roy will help bring resolution and peace with those circumstances in your life that continue to rob you of your shalom. This will help to bring what we have learned into our life. The application of knowledge changes lives. Take some time out of your day today to thank your El Roy for the fact that He is the God who sees. Thank you for joining us today as we delved into the beautiful truths of God's Word to indeed discover that there has to be more. I pray that the Word applied to your daily life will bring a deeper understanding of His love letter written just to you. Let me remind you that we have additional study aids to assist you with our studies together on our website, secctim.org. May this day fill you with the love of God, joy, and shalom, nothing missing, nothing broken in your life.